familiar story to maybe some of you. It is the story of the Exodus. You know about the plagues in Egypt the Israelites, that Moses sort of facilitated for God in Egypt before the people left. This is a story of them just as they leave, as the Pharaoh and the Egyptians let them go, and as they move towards the Red Sea and find themselves in a bit of a bind this morning. So I just invite you to maybe close your eyes and listen to the story, or just listen for what's going on here, taken from various passages in Exodus 13 and 14. So it so happened that after the Pharaoh had released the people, God didn't lead them by the road through the land of the Philistines, which was the shortest route, for God thought, if the people encounter war, they'll change their minds and go back to Egypt. So already God knows that they're a bit of a stubborn people and that they could turn back at any time. So God led the people on the wilderness road, looping around to the Red Sea. The Israelites left Egypt in military fashion. God went ahead of them in a pillar of cloud during the day to guide them on the way, and at night in a pillar of fire to give them light. Thus they could travel both day and night. The pillar of cloud by day and the pillar of fire by night never left the people. When the king of Egypt, or the Pharaoh, was told that the people were gone, he and his servants changed their minds. They said, "What have we done letting Israel, our slave labor, go free?" So he had his chariots harnessed up and got his army together. He took 600 of his best chariots with the rest of the Egyptian chariots and their drivers coming along. God made Pharaoh, king of Egypt, stubborn, determined to chase the Israelites as they walked out on him without even looking back. The Egyptians gave chase and caught up with them where they had made camp by the sea. All Pharaoh's horse-drawn chariots and their riders, all his foot soldiers, there at Pi-Hahiroth, opposite Baal-Zephon. As Pharaoh approached, the Israelites looked up and saw all of the chariots, the Egyptians coming straight for them. And they were totally afraid. They cried out in terror to God. They told Moses, "Weren't the cemeteries large enough in Egypt that you had to take us out here in the wilderness to die? What have you done to us, taking us out of Egypt? Back in Egypt, didn't we tell you that this would happen? Didn't we tell you, leave us alone here in Egypt? We're better off as slaves in Egypt than as corpses in the wilderness." Then Moses spoke to the people, "Don't be afraid. Stand firm and watch God do this work of salvation for you today. Take a good look at the Egyptians today, for you are never going to see them again. God will fight the battle for you, and you stay calm. You won't have to do anything." God said to Moses, "Why cry out to me? Speak to the Israelites, order them to get moving. Hold your staff high and stretch your hand out over the sea and split the sea. The Israelites are going to walk through the sea on dry ground. Meanwhile, I will take care of the Egyptians as they keep up their stubborn chase. I'll use Pharaoh and his entire army, his chariots and horsemen, to put my glory on display so that the Egyptians will realize that I'm God." The angel of God that had been leading the camp of Israel now shifted and got behind them. And the pillar of cloud that had been in front also shifted to the rear. And the cloud was now between the camp of Egypt and between the camp of Israel. The cloud enshrouded one camp in darkness and flooded the other with light. The two camps did not come near each other all night. Then Moses stretched out his hand over the sea, and God, with a terrific east wind all night long, made the sea go back. He made the sea dry ground, and the seawater split. The Israelites walked through the sea on dry ground with the waters a wall to the right and a wall to the left. Remember Moses in the story when Charlton Heston made the waters go back? The Egyptians came after the Israelites in full pursuit, every horse and chariot and driver of Pharaoh racing into the middle of the sea. It was now the morning watch, early in the morning, and God looked down from the pillar of fire and cloud on the Egyptian army and threw them into a panic. He clogged the wheels of their chariots, and they were stuck in the mud. The Egyptians said, "Run from Israel! God is fighting on their side and against Egypt." Then God said to Moses, "Stretch out your hand over the sea, and the waters will come back over the Egyptians, over their chariots, and over their horsemen." Moses stretched his hand out over the sea. And as the day broke and the Egyptians were running, the sea returned to its place as before. God dumped the Egyptians in the middle of the sea. The waters returned, drowning the chariots and riders of Pharaoh's army that had chased after Israel into the sea. Not one of them survived. That's a sermon for another time, that one. But the Israelites walked right through the middle of the sea on dry ground, the waters forming a wall to the right and to the left. God delivered Israel that day from the oppression of the Egyptians. And Israel looked at the Egyptian dead, washed up on the shore of the sea, and realized the tremendous power that God had. And the people were in reverent awe before God and trusted in God and his servant Moses. A story from our ancient scriptures. Many times in our lifetimes, we are called upon to make some really difficult, life-changing decisions. Decisions that will cut off other courses of action and set us on a path that determines our future and often the future of others. If you can change the slide there. Decisions that include risk and sometimes significant risk. Questions like, what kind of life do I want to lead going forward? Where do I go to school? Do I quit my job and go back to school? Do I take that new job? Do I get married? Do I start a family, move to a new place, leave my marriage, get that surgery, move out of my home, stop driving, stop chemotherapy, end an important relationship? And the list of those kinds of decisions in our lives go on and on. So many big decisions in life that will lead us down one path and necessitate rejecting another path. They're big decisions because we cannot know the outcome when we make them. And there's more than one path that we could take. If there was only one decision, that decision would be easy. And we're so often, as human beings, afraid of making the wrong decision or of making a bad decision. And that's what causes sometimes the anxiety and unease in our lives. Because once we've committed to one course of action, we will never know what might have happened had we taken another path. No one is going to get through life without being forced to face some of these difficult dilemmas. It makes life challenging, but it also makes it rewarding when big opportunities force daunting deliberations and we have to follow through on them. We agonize over these decisions with great uncertainty, anxiety, and even fear. They take time and deliberation, information, consultation, and often many days and nights of sleeplessness and hand-wringing. And this is the nature of life. At different junctures in our lives, everyone will have to make momentous life-changing decisions. It's unavoidable. And since it's our lives, We cannot pass these decisions on to others, much as we would like people to tell us. I've often said I would love God to skywrite the answer in the sky, and then I'd know what I was supposed to do. But it's our lives, and we have to take responsibility for what comes next in them, not leave it to somebody else. I have known far too many people who have made decisions for their lives, but don't actually make decisions for their deaths as well, don't put things in order, and they leave it to somebody else to do those things for them. And it's not only individuals who are facing these kinds of challenges. These quandaries exist in other forms. Couples and families have to make these kinds of decisions. Organizations, corporations, communities, governments, and even global institutions are being forced more and more to make difficult decisions. It's complicated, and the decisions made are not always effective. We've seen this over and over in the last few years as leaders have made decisions only to have to walk them back or change course or take the heat for making one decision that other people don't like. That's life. So it is that we find today the Israelites facing a very tough decision as they come to a crossroads. I think, as I was thinking about it, there are some terrifying moments described in Scripture, but I think this has to be at close to the top of the list. Because the decision that they had to make now is going to affect two nations. The Israelites, who would in the end become the Jewish nation in Israel, and the Egyptians. It will, in effect, change the course of history. For it is the liberation story of a people and the subsequent trajectory of a nation. Without these stories, we as Christians would in fact not be sitting here today. Because the Jewish nation from which Jesus came would not have formed. It is a story of endings and new beginnings, and it is a momentous moment of decision. The story tells us that the Israelites had chosen to follow Moses out of slavery in Egypt to the so-called promised land, not really anticipating the challenges that they were going to face on the way. However, they did not get very far before they landed in the proverbial between a rock and a hard place. Here they now stand on the edge of the Red Sea, faced with a seemingly insurmountable problem. They literally stood on the edge of the sea, where they would surely drown if they tried to cross it. But on the other side is this army coming toward them, who is either going to destroy them or take them back to slavery. What do we do now? Well, first, as many are wont to do when these big things come into their lives, they are anxious and frightened. They would wring their hands and weep and get angry, and then they blamed Moses. Why on earth would you do this to us? Wasn't it better to stay there than to come here and be corpses on the edge of a sea? Wouldn't it have been better to stay with what we had knew? You led us out of Egypt and out of slavery and subjugation, only to find ourselves in mortal peril now. How easy to forget that God had led them here and God had promised to get them to where they were supposed to go, to freedom. We too often forget in the most difficult times that God has brought us here and God will get us through. Our faith falters sometimes when we most need it. Of course they were terrified and afraid. Of course they were overwhelmed. Of course they were confused and angry and discouraged. We get that way too. things didn't look good for them in that very moment. What do we do now? It's a good question. They could have gone back. They could have prostrated themselves before the oncoming army and surrendered themselves to the Egyptians, because after all, the Egyptians wanted them back. They're free labor, they're slaves. They could go back and resume their work as slaves. Now, it wouldn't be easy. In fact, it would be much harder for them, because you don't try to run away from something and then expect to go back to it and find that you're better off than you were before. It wouldn't be easy or comfortable, but it would be familiar and predictable to go back. And so it might have seemed like the better and safer option to give up, because at least they'd know what they were in for. What do we do now? Then Moses speaks up and he says, listen, you don't have to do anything. God has led you this far, and God will get you through. They just don't seem so sure about that. It's the fear we all face when we have a big decision to make, to go forward or to stay where we are or go back. When I left my position to go back to school, when I decided that I would leave the church I was at formerly, I loved that church and I loved those people. And when I left and went back to school, I remember distinctly one day walking with my professor, the coordinator of the program, who became a friend, and I was weepy, and I said, I don't know if I made the right decision. I don't know if this is a good decision. I don't know if I should be doing this. I was grieving and deeply sad and fearful and anxious. Had I done the right thing? Was this where I was supposed to be? And although I felt called, I still felt uncertain. It didn't quell my fears or anxiety. Making big decisions will always result in moments of fear and doubt and uncertainty. We can't get rid of those. And we shouldn't pretend that just because we made the decision, it's always going to be smooth sailing ahead. In fact, transitioning into something new can be difficult and daunting. And we'll sometimes wish we were back in the safety of the familiar, just as the Israelites did. Fortunately, I had a very wise professor. And she said to me that what I was feeling was to be expected. That I had loved the people and what I had been doing. And of course I would be sad and uncertain. And then she said something that made it so much easier. She said, if you didn't feel that way, I would be concerned. It just means that you loved those people well. And that's what makes you a good minister. If you didn't feel that way, that's going to be a problem. That was 15 years ago, and I still remember that conversation clearly because it gave me the courage to move forward. And if I hadn't have done that, I wouldn't be here with you, with people I've grown to love and care about deeply. It hasn't always been easy. Life is not easy, but it has been good and rewarding and challenging. God had gotten the Israelites that far. God was not going to let them down at that point. They had to move forward into the unknown, the new, the possibilities. We too are at that place. We are at a junction in history where things are changing at a phenomenal rate. For better or worse, the world is changing. And we can't go back to what was much as we would like to. Nobody can go back. We need to find new ways to be in the world. Trust in all institutions and that in their leaders is at an all-time low right now. It had started before COVID, but it's continuing, including the church. Most institutions in our society today are imploding. They have been for some time. Government, education, healthcare, economic systems, service clubs, even sports that we used to think was wholesome, we're finding out is not. They're all breaking down and failing. We need leaders who will face the future with integrity and make decisions that will ensure the well-being of future generations. The church is one of those places where we can grow those kinds of leaders. The church cannot go back, however, to the 50s and 60s when Sunday schools were full, when social lives revolved around the church and the offering plates were overflowing. Do you know when the last year that the church, United Church grew? Do you know the last year? Anybody have a hazard guess? 1967. But it was a long time ago. 1967 was the last time the United Church grew. Since then, it has been in decline. Today, 11:30, so it's 1:30 in Ontario, Roblin, Ontario. The church that I grew up, today, right now, they're probably having lunch, but the church where I grew up, in the small community of Roblin, Ontario, held its last service today. A church where there's a stained glass window dedicated to my grandparents and great-grandparents. Some of my family will be there today, but they don't attend that church. Nobody in my family attends that church anymore. There are a few of the generation, like our parents and grandparents, who are still left, but that tide is turning, and few are taking their places. Just a few kilometers away from that, where I spent many, many Sundays in Sunday school in Melrose, Ontario. I could ride my bike from my place to my aunt's place, where I spent a lot of time as well. Their doors closed earlier this year as well. And that church is for sale. That building is for sale. The church is aging, and people aren't as interested in organized religion. They are interested in community and justice, in service and spirituality. At one time, the church was not only the largest building in a community, it was the social and charitable hub of the community. Life revolved around the church in small communities in Canada. Not anymore. But there are still needs that the church can meet, that few other organizations can. A few weeks ago, I had a visit with a clergy friend, and she said that the church has tried to do many things over the years, but what it has always been good at is building and maintaining community. This is our strength. We have always opened our doors to people of all ages to engage in all kinds of activities that support life, not only for ourselves, but for our community and the world we live in. There are some big decisions that will have to be made sooner than later. There are exciting possibilities ahead of us if we can be curious, creative, and take risks. And now is the time to do that. We can't wait for another generation to make the changes that need to take place. They may not come. We have to make these changes so that future generations can be attracted to what we can offer. Our building should not sit empty most of the week. A place that claims to be inclusive and community-oriented should be here for the community. It should feel like home to a multitude of people. The Israelites stood on the bank of the Red Sea and had a choice to make: go back or go forward. Trust God or go back to what was. They went forward to a new home, something so totally unlike what they had known that it required a whole new way of thinking for them. They had to organize themselves differently. They were no longer slaves. They had to develop new forms of leadership, amongst themselves. They had to learn how to live differently as farmers rather than slaves. Even their religious practices changed when they went into the new land. Everything changed. Except one thing. One thing was very certain. God had led them there, and God would be with them through the change. It takes faith to trust that whatever decision we make, God will be with us as individuals and as the church. And it doesn't mean that everything's going to work out. It was hard for the Israelites. It doesn't mean that all decisions will have positive outcomes. Just that we have to change and we have to move forward. And can we do this and support each other in doing it? What do we do now? Let's take a moment for reflection.